And we're not on an equal plane with God in any way, but he calls us out of sin in our lives to become his children, just like we sang about. But we worship is what we offer up to God. And in chapter verse 3, it says, acknowledge that the Lord is God. He made us. We're his people, the sheep of his pasture. Worship involves our hearts, our hands, and our minds. When we acknowledge that the Lord is God, the first thing about that is an establishment of the truth. That is, in fact, saying that the one most true fundamental reality in this world and the universe is that the Lord is God. And it's interesting in our Bible study today that the Antichrist was trying to take the seat of God. And that's why he was, in fact, who he was, the Antichrist. And even in 2 Thessalonians, I think one of those scriptures in chapter 2 says it was because of their unbelief in the truth. And the fundamental truth in this world is that the Lord is God. And that's where we need to focus. But we acknowledge that the Lord is God. And this acknowledgement and involvement is just like what you've seen witness with your group of 10 or 11 that have gone to Costa Rica, and they've been doing this for 6 years. And Danny, who's been in the word again, Oaxaca, Mexico for 2 years as a journeyman, that they have, in effect, given completely of themselves and given themselves fully, which is what the scripture says in the New Testament. The Macedonians, even, that when they gave the offering to the folks in Jerusalem, they first gave themselves to the Lord, and then they gave their offering. It's kind of an interesting perspective, isn't it? But we have everything that we have, that we are, that we will be, belongs to the Lord. And we are his. He made us. So he's got full right to do whatever he wants to with us. We're his people. And the scripture tells us in the New Testament, we're not just his people, but we're his children when we come to faith in Christ. And the sheep of his pasture. And when I think about sheep, I know that we got cows. My dad raised cattle as a hobby. A hobby is something that you throw money away at, right? And mom and dad said, they never found a day that they could make money on cows, but they love looking at them. And so I'm learning that same lesson. And I don't live in Oaxaca, But those cattle on that farm, like sheep, I mean, they knew my voice. And the other day, I whistled. This was one of those days God was just good to us. We were winning calves, and I whistled, and they all came. And they all stood right where I wanted them to. And I thought, Lord, what a miracle that was, But they did that. They knew my voice, and they would come to it, because usually when they get there, there's something good at the end of that voice. God is that way with us as the sheep of his pasture, that he wants us to have the good things from him. And I'm not talking about just material things, but the good things. That's what he wants us to have. And that's the way God makes us. And that's why the psalmist and we, at the same time, when we enter into that time of worship, when we come to give to God what belongs to him, when we come to give recognition to him, when we come to acknowledge him for who he is, then there's an experience that we can't help but receive because we're in his presence. But not only does worship is what we offer up to God, and it's when we give all of ourselves to him, but worship draws us into the Father's presence. In verse 4, it says, enter his gates first with thanksgiving, and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and bless his name. The gates on the city were outside. That was the perimeter. And then when you got closer to the center, to the temple, you would enter the courts of the temple. And God is saying, come what? Into my presence. Come into my presence. I'm inviting you. I'm drawing you closer to me. To be close to me. When we worship and give to God that which is due him, when we acknowledge him for who he is, the result of that is that God draws us closer into his presence. We have an experience, a fresh encounter with God, a fresh encounter with God. And finally, worship moves us to join God on missions. It says here, give thanks to him and bless his name, for the Lord is good and his faithful love endures forever, his faithfulness through all generations. I don't know what all that Danny was doing. I read the PowerPoint about some praying for opportunities to share the gospel with folks there. And I'm sure she's serving in other ways. But you remember, I thought about this morning actually, is how when our calling as children of God is when we offer a sacrifice to God. Do you remember what it said in Micah chapter 6, verse 8? What God desired is justice, faithfulness, and humility. You can give all sorts of offerings to God, but if you don't give those things to Him, if you're not living that life of justice, that life of faithfulness, that life of humility before Him, then those offerings really don't amount to a whole lot. And that was their challenge back in that day. But when God speaks to us, when we enter into a worship relationship with God, when we come to that place in our lives where worship isn't just what we get here between 10:30 and 11:30 or 12:30, if be Lord willing. But it's not what you get, but what you give, because what you give flows out of this moment into Sunday afternoon and Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and every day. And those are the times and the moments in our lives when justice and faithfulness and humility are being applied in this world. Because, you know, it's really interesting that the church isn't the end. It's the means. The church is the means through which God is displaying His glory to the world. So when I think about the purpose of the church, we're not it. We're the conduit of God's grace and mercy and truth, isn't it? Remember John 1:14 says that we beheld His glory, talking about Jesus, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father. What does it say? Full of grace and truth. Full of grace and truth. And we're reflections. We're made in that likeness as a body of believers to reflect His grace and truth in this world. We're put on this world, in this world, as His witnesses to do three things. We're here as God's children to make reproducing disciples. I want to stop and just let you ponder on that for just a minute. The mission work that you do in Costa Rica, the mission work that Danny's done in Mexico, what we've been involved in, is all about making reproducing disciples. I love cattle, but I really couldn't afford to have cattle on the farm that weren't making more cattle. And God wants us to have spiritual children who will have spiritual children. That's one thing that we're called to do. The second thing we're called to do is to glorify God, not in this order, but to glorify God. And Romans chapter 11 says, "Oh, the depth and the riches of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable are His ways, His past beyond tracing out. Who has ever given to God that He should repay him? Or who has ever advised God that he should listen to him?" Basically, if I can paraphrase that, "For from him and to him and through him are all things. To him be the glory forever and ever. Amen." And then he says, "Therefore, urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to prove that what? Your bodies as living sacrifices to God. This is your reasonable act of service. And don't be conformed any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, and then you will test and approve what God's will is, His good and pleasing and perfect will." We begin to know the will and the mind of God as we give ourselves away to Him. But worship moves me to say yes to Jesus, and this isn't on the PowerPoint. Worship moves me to say yes to Jesus. When I present myself as a sacrifice to God, when I begin to move from what can I get to what can I give to Him in honor of who He is and what He's done in our lives, then what happens is God actually draws us closer to Himself. And when He draws us closer to Himself, He draws us closer to what He's doing in this world. And before I forget, the third thing that we're here for as a church is not only to make reproducing disciples and to glorify God, but we're also here to season and bless our community. We do that in many ways, and Jesus talked about that in chapter 5 when he said, of Matthew, he said, be salt and light in this world. And, you know, whenever I think about the health of a church and how we're doing, I'm always going to want to go to those three things. Or is the church making reproducing disciples? You can do that in many different ways. It might be something structured like Sunday school, or it might be in a small life group that meets in a home. Or it could even be you've got someone that you've led to the Lord, and that person is walking alongside you, and you're personally discipling them over a period of time to grow in the Lord by your witness and your word with them, even at your work, making reproducing disciples, blessing and seasoning the community, and glorifying God. But worship draws us to the place where not only we draw near to God, but at the same time it draws us to the place where we are joining Him on mission. We're joining Him on mission. And it'll be a miracle if you're done with this by 11:30. But I'm going to try my best to do that. Because, you see, worshiping God is abandoning everything for His name, isn't it? Now, let me see. Off and on. And this little error. What am I doing? There's no light here. The black one? Ah, there you go. This is what was supposed to happen all along. I'm sorry. Y'all are taking notes because of worship. Okay. But it draws us into the Father's presence and joins us in mission. I want to talk about this for just a minute because of all these three things that I've put out here, the four things that are here, these are things that are happening in the association. I've served as your missions director or missions catalyst is the phrase I like to use. I think that's a better description than director of missions as a role. And since January of last year, so it's been almost a year and a half. And one thing I can say for sure is I have seen God move in our churches and among our people in a way that I never expected. That's kind of like God's normal method of operation, isn't it? Is He surprises us with what He does. I think Moses was a little bit surprised when God said, throw the stick down and pick it back up. You know, I mean, that was a little bit of a surprise. And then when He said, step out into the water, I'm going to do something here too, that was a bigger surprise. And then when He said, just trust Me, I'm going to send you some food tomorrow morning, the food's going to rain down from heaven, it was a more surprise. And then when He said, I want you to speak to the rock and I'm going to give you some water, that was also a big surprise. You know, God puts us, when we begin to move ourselves in the direction of where God is going, we don't have to know exactly where He's leading us to, we just need to be moving in that direction. Have you ever noticed that? That when God begins to get your attention, sometimes in your life, you're moving, you kind of turn in a certain direction. You move your life, the movement, the direction, and the flow of where you're going, maybe is a word I'm thinking about, the flow, the current that you're taking your life in, then moves you in this direction. And God at the same time is beginning to more and more and more as we focus on Him, as we worship Him, that He refines that to the point that somebody like Danny would know, Oaxaca, Mexico, that's where she's going to be. And so we've seen this pattern happen over and over in the last year and a half. One of them was, we saw this with our churches, we realized, well, one thing that we need to do is we need to have a strategic and intentional plan on where we would go as a network of New Testament Great Commission churches. We need to have a plan. I know that Brother Clay is out working today in the potato fields, and I understand that and appreciate that and respect it, that you got to do this at some point in time. The potatoes are ripe today, and you got to get them up. No problem with that. But I also know that everything he does, not just today, but probably for the weeks leading up to it, there was an exact purpose for it, right? I mean, because he's got a very clear target. I have to get these potatoes up today because they're going to go to get made into potato chips, and that can only happen in a small window of time. So I'm thinking that Brother Clay is very strategic and intentional about everything that he's doing right now. And some things that he would love to do, maybe he has to put aside for a few days until he gets this job out of the way. Does that sound missional to you? And sometimes when God calls us into something that we have to make a choice. We have to put some things out of the way so that we can do what he's called us to. And the vision team is a group of folks that we've recruited through our churches, and we've asked, and they represent a broad spectrum of folks and interest in the community in Suwannee and Hamilton County. And they're looking at three things. They're looking at where are the needs in our community, how is God at work in our churches, and how do we put those two together? And that's kind of an interesting thing that we're discovering. You know, there's needs everywhere. There's needs everywhere. And one thing that we've learned in this process is that many times when we do ministry to people, we do ministry for people, but we don't do ministry with people. Remember when Joseph was the number two guy in Egypt and the famine came and the people had 7 years of this famine, and the first thing he said is, I'm not just going to give you food, but you can buy it. You can buy it. And they spent all their money, and they sold for food their animals. And then they sold their service before they were done. But all the time, Joseph maintained the dignity of those people that were receiving that help. So what we've learned in missions is the best way to do missions is when you do with someone and not for or to. Because of all the relationships we have through Christ, our relationship with the Father, our relationship with each other, our relationship with all of creation, there's also a relationship we have with ourselves. And by that I mean how we see ourselves as people. And God never takes away our dignity. He always maintains that because we're created in His image. So our vision team is at work doing that. And in September, we hope to present some information, a vision to the association through the executive committee, which meets then in preparation for the annual meeting in October. Student Summer Missions Team, boy, I'm excited about this and the other, but let me skip down to the last one. I'm actually going to do it before 11:30. let me skip down to the last one. When I think about churches and health, and I mentioned those things that we do earlier, a lot of our churches are not healthy. I mean, we just have to be honest, we're not healthy. We're not making reproducing disciples. We're not glorifying God in the way we need to. We're not seasoning and blessing our community the way we can. And so we've asked some folks from the North American Mission Board to come spend some time with us on a Sunday night at Shady Grove Baptist Church, and then with some church leadership on Monday at lunch at the association office, and also that Monday evening. And this is not just open to pastors, it's open to church leaders. So one thing we're inviting folks to do is inviting Southside to come be a part of what's happening at Shady Grove, because it's for everybody. And we're trying to make these ministries and these services and helps available where the churches are. So let me just go on from there, because the last couple of things are really tied together, the Student Summer Missions and the Mexico Missions partnership. We have a friend in Tennessee named Jack Roach, and Jack is like the Apostle Paul. And you kind of mentioned this, made me think about this today, because you asked what Paul's job was, what his profession was, and he was a tent maker. So that was his profession. But that wasn't Paul's passion, was it? What was Paul's passion?
Preaching.
Missions, right? Preaching, missions. I mean, it was making disciples. At the same time, all those are correct answers. So he had a profession and he had a passion. And Jack Roach is our CPA. He's been doing that for over 20 years from Cleveland, Tennessee. And Jack has a profession. He's a CPA. His passion is global missions. Jack has a little ministry he calls More Ministry, moving others to reach earth. And through this ministry, Jack has supported over the decades and been discipling people in all over the world. There's folks that he's supporting and helping in Asia, Eastern Asia, the Stan countries, Afghanistan, I can't pronounce them, I can't, Oaxaca, you know, it's easy now for the Stan countries, but Mongolia, China, and Mexico are some of the places that he's doing this. There's 15 different families or individuals that More Ministry is involved with. Every year when we do our taxes, Jack and I and Ramona sit down for about an hour and 15 minutes. We take our information to him. And for 30 minutes, we do taxes, and the other 45 minutes, we have a worship experience, because we get to share how God is at work and to celebrate what he's doing. And every year, Jack invites. And in the camp ministry we were in for 20 years before we moved back to Florida, it was a difficult thing to make those schedules work. But this year, and going up, I knew this was going to be a different time. And, you know, it's interesting. I look back on this, and I remember times in the last year and a half where I've said to the Lord, I want to give myself completely to you. I want to be abandoned to you. I want to give away everything I am for you, the good and the bad. Lord, it all belongs to you. And on the way up, I told Ramon, I said, don't worry, Jack's going to be talking about this year, but I think I'm going. And so when we came to that time of fellowship, and he shared that with me, where he was going to Mexico in April, not to Guadalajara, the central part of Mexico, and the mountain region north of that, I told Jack, I said, I'm going with you. Now listen, I didn't tell him I'm going to pray about it. I didn't tell him I'm going to think about it, because I'd already prayed about it and thought about it. And I knew what the Lord was telling me. He said, you're going to go with Jack. And so I went. And I went to carry his backpack. Jack is 70. He sits behind a desk from December to April the 17th or the 19th. And as soon as tax season is over, he packs. He's got his bag packed and his backpack and his sleeping bag and his hiking boots. And he's headed somewhere, because that's his passion. And I knew Jack is 70. He has a pacemaker. He's not the mountain climber he used to be. His grandkids would be climbing over the mountain if they were playing on top of him, you know. And so I thought, my brother and my friend, I want to go and just help. I don't speak Spanish. I don't know the language. I've never been there before, but I want to go and help and just carry your backpack for you and be a servant. Be a servant. And what was it that it said? And it says, for God, the Lord God is good, and he loves faithfulness, it endures forever. But he says, oh goodness, humility, justice, and faithfulness. Micah chapter 6, verse 8. Humility. Now, I'm a missions catalyst for one of maybe 64 jobs in the state of Florida, so I appreciate that. I appreciate that. That doesn't make me special, but I know that's kind of a unique role that a few of us have in this state. And I could go down there and tell people, I want y'all to do things this way and this way and this way, you know, our way. But I realize that our way doesn't necessarily work in Mexico. You guys know that, don't you? Our way doesn't work in Costa Rica, you know? Our way doesn't work in the stand country. So we had to go with a humility and a heart to serve and a mind to say, how can we assist you as you fulfill your vision for what God is calling you to do to make reproducing disciples in community. So Jack is going to Mexico. He's got friends down there. We fly down there on April 24th. And the first thing that I get to do on Sunday when we're packing and loading up after a couple of days of getting ready, besides, you know, one night I made 70 pounds of banana nut bread with Miss Edith, who was 74 years old, and she was preparing for the group to go. Yeah. I mean, we were up till early in the morning making banana bread. After making the banana bread, one of the guys said, Andy, I'm trying to use my Mexican accent, Andy, he said, get up on the back of that van. You're going to tie down all the luggage. And about halfway through, I figured they're testing me. And guess what? Halfway through the trip, he told me, we were testing you. He said, you're the hardest working gringo we've ever had. We like you. Come back. And so we went up. We drove from Guadalajara, a city of about 600,000 people, 3.5 hours on the pavement, got off the pavement, drove another 3.5 hours up into the mountains and started working. A medical mission, dental, vision, and basic health care. And as I was there, I didn't go with this in mind. But as I was there and I was praying and just serving, I couldn't speak the language, so I was just trying to help out. I began to hear God say something like this. You came to help carry Jack's backpack. I've got a bigger plan. I have a different plan. I want you to lead your people back here. You see, in the same way in Psalms chapter 100, we get to say we're God's people, I get to claim you as my people, and I'm your people. But he says, I have a purpose here. For over 25 years, Jack and missionaries on the field like Jorge Bernal and Hector and others have faithfully served, walking those trails and those roads, riding the vans, the buses, and just making disciples household by household to two Indian groups, the Huichol and the Chorus Indians. And where we drove for 3.5 hours on the pavement, then got off for another 3.5 hours and drove even farther, and there we'd set up our base, and then we'd go out another hour and a half farther out to bring people back to where we're doing the medical mission. That was what was happening. And God began to speak to me about this and said, you know, you as an association, you've got the resources to do something about this opportunity, this window that in the last 25 years, this long-term mission endeavor that's been taking place with Mexicans trying to make disciples of the Huichol and Chorus Indians so that they could make disciples themselves, is at a moment in time where there's about to be an explosion. There's about to be a harvest of fruit that's going to take place. And here's just an example of what happened. In one village we went to, we were there for a couple of days doing the medical mission, and then we left. And then Hector, the black one, right? This guy right here with the big smile, the tank top on the left, and his wife Maria, he's a pastor in that area. And Hector said, we had a children's ministry event the day after you left, and there were 180 children that showed up. Now, Westwood's going to have about 195 children, I think, at VBS next week. I know that because our student missions team is going to be working with them. But that was the day after we left. And I was pretty excited about that. These two ladies are cooking. It was a home. This was in the living room in the kitchen area where we were at. So you know, we were, the electricity was their light bulb, and you can see up, you can't see it, but you can see it in the corner of it. That was the light bulb for the house. And this is the living conditions. You sleep on the floor. And these were two ladies who were believers, and they were cooking a meal for about 20 of us. We brought our own food, but they put some stuff together as well. This is Dr. Angel Rincon. He's a dentist. And he spoke good English. And so we were together. I was teamed with a group of folks that were doing dental work and medical work. There was about 10 of us, and there were 37 in the entire group. And we went from one location in Guadalajara, from the Figueroa family's house, we left, and then we split up. Because Ruth, one of the ladies that was in that other video, had organized to divide us up so we could multiply our work. On this day, we had planned to go to a village that was an hour and a half ride by boat upriver from a dam that the government had built. And when we got there, I love this, I gotta tell Tommy this mission story. Our mission team was about 17 or 18 people in our group. And so they had rented or reserved a boat to take us all and all our equipment and our supplies upriver. And I looked at that boat, and it was a big boat. It's about like this long to the door and about that wide. And I looked at it and I said, no, that's not going to happen. Because I had helped load all those boxes, and I knew what they were, and I could count heads. And I said, there's no way we can get everybody and all that stuff in that boat. And so the exciting part about this is that we didn't know that for sure. We were still talking to some other boat operators when our first half of our group left. And our cell phones didn't work up there. So they were a half hour up the river, and we finally realized we're not going to make that trip with them. Now, how'd you like to be part of the group going to Atlanta to do mission work in the inner city, and you got split up, and there's no way to talk to each other, and you don't know where they are? That would sound like a catastrophe, wouldn't it? I mean, you would be calling home wanting your pastor's resignation yesterday. You would. But I'm just telling you that what happened where we went, that we didn't know we were going, was something God did. Because they told us when we finally decided we're not going to make it upriver, well, we know this brother and this family, and we can stay there for the night, and we'll just have to say we wrote this off this day, these 24 hours off, as not being fruitful. And we'll meet back at the boat ramp, and then we'll go to our next stop. But by the time we had a meal with this lady, people were coming to her house, because they had heard the brothers were there and the sisters. And what we were doing, it was getting dark, and so they were doing a little medical exams, which I won't go into time to tell you how that works, but it's really an amazing thing. And we ministered to and shared the gospel with over 40 people on that day. And this was what was happening there. This is a typical house. You've probably seen pictures like this from Costa Rica, haven't you? It's very much the same in Mexico where we're at. The Chorus and Indian people are basically an ostracized group of people by the Mexicans. So if you're of that origin, if you're Chorus or Huichol Indian, which is from the Aztec families, then you live on the other side of the tracks. And they don't act like there's any political correctness one way or the other to that. You just live on the other side of the tracks because you're not going to do anything over here except spend your money, and then you go back to your house. and this is the living conditions. This is Dr. Angel and Cynthia, and that guy, the really good-looking guy in the back, is me, if you didn't recognize the nice cut hair. And this was somebody's house. This was Pablo's house. Pablo, at one time, would be the New Testament's version of a man of peace before he became a Christian. And Jack and Jorge and Victor, Hector, that group of men led him to the Lord, and he was a leader in the community. And he said, I'll let you guys stay here, and you can do the medical mission in our front yard. And this was one of the bedrooms. And that Coca-Cola bottle is our water bottle where the water came through for the water pick as the dentist cleaned your teeth. I mean, that's how we worked. So Cynthia is a college student studying to be a teacher. And one day, Angel, he saw how hard I was working. And he said, I want Andy to be my dental assistant. That was fun. It was wonderful. And I got to spend a lot of time listening to Angel and sharing the vision and development as it was going along. But we were doing dental work there. And then while we were doing that, folks like Tamek and his wife, Frisia, and you can see Tamek with the hat. He's a nurse and she's a nurse. And they were sharing the gospel with the families as they were waiting for the medical care to take place. And this is a taxi. And it's Jack, and then the two other adults in the back of the taxi are Mai and Ileana. Mai is a paramedic. Paramedics cannot support themselves financially in Mexico. They just don't make enough money. So Mai has a deli truck that's semi-permanently parked in front of his apartment complex in Guadalajara. The apartment complex would be this size to the wall, basically. And Ruth and Edith... Ruth and Etrium, their children live with them, and then Edith, the girl that I'm sitting next to, is a 17-year-old who's in the adoption process, hopefully going to have a family in Washington State adopt her. She speaks some broken English, so she served as a translator for me. But everybody behind Jack is in the back seat of the Ford Fiesta, okay? That was the normal travel mode. But we stayed with them. I slept on a cot, Jack slept on a futon. Jack has been discipling Mai, and we believe Mai's being called by God, Mai and Ileana, to live in one of these villages and then to continue his education we hope to be able to be a part of. This is that core group of young men that Jack has been discipling. And then this is a baptism that took place, and the one group did make it to the river, and Jack's group. And the folks there, the gentleman on his right, is Jorge Bernal, the pastor that's been like in a modern-day Apostle Paul, walking the streets, making disciples village to village, person to person. And they were doing a baptism there in this village. And this is part of our mission team and some local believers that we were there at the end of the week. One of the other things that was kind of interesting that happened, I'll just share some names. This is Ruth. She put all this together. This is Pablo and his wife. They opened their homes to us. And this man right here is one of the three authorities in the village we were at. In the past, they wouldn't listen. They didn't want to be around. But this past week, getting over the cold. The week we were there, they had a placita, a talk. Everybody came. All the adults came to sit under the tree to hear the talk that they were sharing. And these men came to the medical clinic. We're seeing a movement, an openness to the gospel because of that medical mission. This is the Figueroa family. And I'm finishing right here. I slept outside with Jack. That's why I'm still coughing. I had some of that Mexican dust. I haven't quite gotten over it yet. And that's all Jack's boots there. And I had my camera phone with me. And I thought I got to take that picture because it just kind of spoke to me. And see, remember, worship leads us closer to God. And worship leads us to be on mission with Jesus. And this is what I believe. I believe that God is calling our churches. Maybe it's a Southside and a Shady Grove partnering together to assist and come alongside a young pastor like Mai and Ileana, who would go into a Mexican Indian village and live there and be the pastor to that community and make disciples of those Huichol or Coarse Indian people so that those folks would be sending and making disciples themselves. And we would work with them to the point in time they would be able to sustain the ministry themselves. So we're treating them as partners, full partners in missions. And it would be their ministry, not ours. We're supporting and assisting at the same time. That's a beautiful picture to me of how God has called us to be part of what God is doing in the world. I mentioned the Student Summer Missionaries in this handout. A really neat thing happened. Last October, are you giving an offering to me already? Okay. Last October, that's a sign that my time is up, right? Last October, we presented as part of our mission plan for the association the idea of having a group of local high school and college students who would be part of a student summer missions team, and they would work with our churches throughout this summer assisting with community missions. And that's just a general name for anything from vacation Bible school to an evangelism block party and everything in between. And our goal was to have 5 to 7 students. It's a good number. You know, 7 is a good biblical number, so that's where I kind of start with that. And April 24th, I had two students, and they start work on the 1st of June. That's not even a month and a half, and I only have 2 students from our churches. So my mom says there's a fine line between worry and deep concern, right? Yeah. And I wasn't worried because I'd seen God do things in the past where his schedule and the way he's arranging and working things out don't fit what I think they need to be, but they fit perfectly for his agenda. And so I wasn't worried, but I was paying close attention. I was paying close attention. And when I got on that plane to leave, I was paying close attention. And my mind was partly on these students, and not just the ones that I knew of, but the ones that I thought, Lord, you know, with 2, that it's really going to be difficult to do what we want to do. We could do it with 4. You know, but 2 is going to be tough. And so I was praying about that. And lo and behold, Cynthia Hernandez, who taught me and got me certified as a dental assistant during that week, was a high school, college student. And one day in our work, we had a little break, and she was standing out looking over the children's activities down below us in the area in front of where we were. And I went out to just spend some time with her. We'd become friends. And so I wanted to learn a little bit more about her. And as we talked, I began to sense. I said, you know, it's like this. It says, Andy. I said, yeah, Lord. He says, you know the students from our missionaries that you wanted from Florida, from Swanee and Hamilton County? I said, yeah. Well, I got a couple of them here in Mexico. I got a couple of them here that I want you to take back with you for part of the summer. And so what happened was our Swanee Hamilton County students from our mission team became what? A global missions exchange. Who would have thunk, you know? Who would have thought God would have had that in mind? But he had to get me someplace to where I could see it. Because I wouldn't have thought of that by myself. I mean, that wasn't in me. And so I asked Cynthia, they're leaning up against that fence. You know, and here's the way I'm work. I do the math real quick, you know? Because I know that when we, and I love this about where we are as association, I knew that when we voted to do this, we didn't just make that part of our budget. We took money out of our reserves to fund this. That was important to me because the Swanee Baptist Association, we are not poor. There are many associations in the state that they struggle financially. We do not have to struggle. We've been blessed because of people that have led us in the past to have money to work with. You know, when I came to work here, it was over $300,000 in assets that we had. And I don't throw that around lightly to brag. I'm just saying this, that it was a good thing for us to be able to have that. To me, that's a lot of money. I don't know about you, but it was a lot of money. But it's also a great responsibility in our day, right? Because God didn't want us to have funds. He wants us to what? Put it to work in his kingdom. And so when I began to talk with our leadership last year about that, they said, well, let's do that. Let's find a way to start putting some of that to work. And so we set aside, out of those reserves, some of that you've contributed to, $15,000 to cover the cost of paying student summer missionaries good salaries and doing the work we wanted to do. And so when we only had 2 on April 24th, and I started thinking, well, Cynthia, maybe somebody else could do this, and maybe God's calling them. I started doing the math real quick about the airline tickets and everything. I thought, well, we can still make that work. And so when I asked her, I said, Cynthia, I says, let me tell you about these summer missionaries in Florida that we're going to be working with this summer. I shared that story, and I asked her, I said, do you think you would like to come be a part of that? Absolutely. Absolutely. Without question. And the next thing I said was, well, do you have a friend or somebody that you know that you think would be a good person to bring with you? He said, my best friend, Abigail. I mean, it was no doubt. Immediately, she knew who she wanted to bring with her. And so Cynthia and Abigail and Daniel Serrano, who I worked with that past week, are coming to be with us on July 12th. We're flying them in to spend 2 weeks with our four now student summer missionaries from Suwannee and Hamilton County, because those other two showed up just a couple of weeks ago. So God still took care of that, just on his time. So now guess what? We've got seven for those 2 weeks and four for right now. So we got enough because that's what God gave us. And so the really exciting thing about that is that recently, Jack said to me, he says, Andy, we've been asked to go back to Mexico, not just in October on the 19th when we're doing another medical mission, but they want us to come back in July. Can you go? And I thought, I'd love to, but I can't. I've got too much responsibility this summer with these groups. And I already asked some to come from Mexico, so I really couldn't make that trip. But I thought, maybe I can find some folks to go with us or to send in our place. And so Brother Eric Clinton from Shady Grove and Jason Bond from Rosemary Baptist and Bethany McDonald, whose husband Matthew is a pastor at Friendship, and they were IMB missionaries to Spain for a couple of years. So Bethany speaks good Spanish. And they've agreed to go to do some fact-finding and relationship building and to come back with a report. They're kind of like the spies going into Jericho. You know, I mean, really. Because we're going to another area outside of Guadalajara to the east, and we're going to see if some doors are opening up now that they believe are opening, that we can be a part of there just as well as on the western part that I was at. And so on July the 12th, this is exciting to me, we're going to take these three to Jacksonville Airport. Their plane leaves about 7:30. Daniel and Cynthia and Abigail arrive at 5:05 if their plane's on time. So, you know, we're going to meet together in the lobby at the airport at the rocking chairs and say hello, and we love you, and pray together and have a little revival service, an international revival meeting there in Jacksonville before we put them on the plane and we bring those three college students back for 2 weeks. Isn't that wonderful? Like, I can work that out. I mean, what a precious time. I can hardly wait, you know. I can hardly wait to be a part of that, what God is doing there in that moment as we tear down a wall. and the gospel changes people's lives. And you know, when you enter into a worship relationship with God, what happens? He changes you. He changes you. And you cannot be the same anymore. You cannot be the same anymore and continue to walk with him the way he wants you. My people, my sheep, my people, we belong to him.